five verses this morning. And let me ask a question first. You don't have to raise your hand. I know it's true for you too, but has your gut ever told you one thing and your head told you something else? Listening to your gut or listening to your head, the two of them are contradicting each other. It's a conflict going on. It feels almost like a civil war. How can all of this be happening inside one person? I'm hearing two different things from two different sources. And we'll answer that question and hopefully bring some understanding in just a minute. But I want to read five verses that are most familiar and go somewhere I've never gone before with this Bible story. It's the story of two sisters, the famous sisters, Mary and Martha. And in Luke chapter 10, beginning at verse 38, it says, "Now it happened as they went that he, Jesus, entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was distracted with much serving. And she approached him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me.' And Jesus answered and said to her, 'Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things, but one thing is needed. And Mary has chosen that good part which will not be taken away from her.'" The Message translation says it like this: "Mary has chosen the essential thing. It's the main course." And my title today is "The Main Course: One Sits While One Serves." Notice these two sisters. They had so much in common. They had the same mother. They had the same father. They had the same brother we know to be Lazarus. These were close siblings. And both Mary and Martha loved Jesus. They followed him. They welcomed him. He had been in their home more than once. They had so much in common, but today I want to look at the difference in their makeup and in their giftings. How can two sisters who share so much in common be wired so different? I think this will help us relate better to our spouses who think a little different than we do. Or perhaps a coworker, or somebody else, a brother or a sister, a friend in the body that doesn't quite have the same gift you have. Sometimes it's difficult to relate and to connect and to respect and to work together with someone who has a different gift, a different makeup. Now, each of these sisters, both Mary and Martha, if you were to ask them, "Are you a worshiper or are you a server?" Both of them would, without a doubt, said, "Well, I do both. I worship and I serve." Mary would have said it. Martha would have said it. "I do both. I worship and I serve." And in order to look at their profiles and compare the differences in their makeup as sisters, we have to take a little lesson in Christian psychology this morning. I know some people don't believe in Christian psychology. I even know one famous preacher whose name I will not call who says there is no such thing. Perhaps you don't think you've ever met a Christian psychologist. But if you were here about seven Sundays ago, you enjoyed the ministry and were blessed by the ministry of a Christian psychologist. Dr. Lavon Young spoke here. Remember the great word he brought? Living on the edge of faith? Well, he's a Christian psychologist, a PhD, spirit-filled. So there is such a thing as a Christian spirit-filled psychologist. And in order to understand how these two sisters could have so much in common and yet be so different in their giftings, we need to consider the brain, the human brain. Our human brain is divided into two parts. There is the right brain, and there is the left brain. Now, we all have both parts, but the different sides of our brain function differently. They speak to us differently. The right brain, you can decide which you are dominant, whether you're a right brain person or a left brain person. In the next 2 minutes, I'll tell you the difference. The right brain, that's the visionary part of us. That's the creative part. That's the intuitive part. That's the emotional part. The right side of our brain tells us how we feel about something. The left side of our brain is the logical part. It's the practical part. The right side says, I'll tell you how I feel about this thing. The left side doesn't respond to feelings. It's just about the facts. The left side of the brain says, just the facts, please. I can do the math. Now, we have both the right side and the left side, and we should use both. But usually one is dominant in a person, and the other is recessive. And it's not always consistent throughout your life. There are seasons in your life where you will be more creative and more artistic, more right-brained in your decision-making, how you feel about a certain thing. There will be other seasons in your life, the same person will be dominated by their left brain. They've got to figure this out logically and practically and reasonably. We should employ both the right side and the left side of our brain. And the good news is, staying within the Bible here, Jesus is Lord over both sides. The right side is all about the wine. The left side is about the wine skin, the structure that holds the wine. The right side has boundless imagination, and it just goes with the flow, and every hour is organic in life. That's the right side. The left side is opposite. The left side is about structure and routine, the familiar, the comfortable. And a left-brained person will be happy with guidelines. The right side of the brain, that brings out the artist in us. The left side brings out the scientist in us. To a right-brained person, the phrase presence of spirit means a lot. To a left-brained person, the phrase presence of mind means a lot. And again, Jesus is Lord over both. The artist in me, the right-brained thinker in me, is the writer in me, the poet in me, the songwriter in me, the dreamer in me, the creator with a vivid imagination that knows no limits in me. That's the right side. The right side of the brain is the free spirit, very sensitive, sometimes emotional. The left side is the scientist, and the scientist in me is a practical thinker. I lean on common sense. The scientist checks all the boxes It runs every idea and every decision through a litmus test. It's rational, it's analytical, it's calculating. A left-brain person is organized and has everything in order. A left-brain person understands that nothing can be done with excellence unless details are perfected, and details are very important. A left-brain person will say things like, you cannot improve what you don't measure. That comes from the left brain. A left-brain person will say, measure twice and cut once. I heard somebody say that. I guess they were working on this building here, cutting a board. And I heard the supervisor say, measure twice and cut once. And I thought, that's a good thing to live by. So when our daughter Tiffany was in her teenage years, she had to have a gallbladder removed, and we were at the hospital and meeting with the surgeon before the surgery, and he was describing what he would do. And I said to him, the surgeon, I said to him, Doc, measure twice and cut once. And he got it right. I think he measured twice. That's a left-brained thinker. And a left-brain scientist will say things like, there is only one right answer to this problem. There are not two or three or four. There's only one right answer. Now, there's a difference between someone who is right-brained dominant and someone who is left-brained dominant. The artist, the right brain, is potentially a stronger leader. The right brain is about leadership, while the left brain person, the scientist, is usually a better manager. An artist, right brain, is people oriented, sensitive. The left brain scientist is project oriented. Now, it's important to know what your dominant gift is, whether you're right or left, whether you're artist or scientist, because it's so important to know what you're not gifted at. That's why I don't do a whole lot, because I just know going in, I'm not gifted at that. I don't even know where the screwdriver is at my house. Don't tell me. I don't want to know. That's not my lane. That's not my gift. But you'll make a mess at your house or in your business or in any other arena of life if you take a scientist and put him where an artist ought to be. Or if you take an artist and put him where a scientist ought to be. The artist is random and deals with abstract. If they were to color anything, they'd be all outside the lines. The scientist is meticulous, and he's a professional planner. We need both. We have to be both. All of us have both capacities in our head, the left and the right. Now, the artist in us and the scientist in us should work together. Here's a couple of examples, one in real life, one from the Bible. 20-plus years ago, we wanted to build this church building. So the first thing we did is I met with an artist. Her name is Linda English, the best in these parts of the country. And some of you may have taken her painting art class, bought some of her artwork. So I described to her what we wanted the building. Well, we want the building to look like. And she, being an artist, began to draw what we were describing. She did a tremendous job. When she finished, I said, yeah, we want the building to look like that. And after the artist finished her work, we went to the engineers. Those are the scientists. We showed them the picture and said, we want a building that looks like this. And he asked us 1,000 questions in detail. How many do you want the sanctuary to seat? 600. How many classrooms do you need? We told him. We told him we wanted a conference room. We wanted two nurseries because our women are getting pregnant. And we don't see any stopping that. Said, we're going to need an office wing. We're going to need five offices in the office wing. And we told them in detail. So then the scientists, plural, went to work with their making up a blueprint of every beam, how thick it had to be, how much weight it would be able to support, how far apart they could be, how we could have this much open space without a support beam in the middle of the sanctuary. I mean, these were scientists, and they did their part. We could not have built this building with an artist alone or with a scientist alone. Both had to work together. Imagine, and many little boys and girls have this story. Ever since they were a child, grew up dreaming, daydreaming. Nothing would get them more excited than dreaming about crawling into the cockpit of an airplane and flying a plane. And that's a wonderful thing to have, a dream. That's so artsy. But when I get on a plane, I want to hear the pilot say, oh yeah, I've dreamed about flying all my life. But I also want to hear him say, I have been in simulators, I have been in flight training, I've got 20,000 hours already in the air. I am trained and I can do the job. I want an artist who appreciates science as well. And there is a place for both. Now, the left brain scientist concerns himself with some things that a right brain artist could not care less about. Think about it. The scientist in us, the analytical, logical, practical, routine loving, familiar loving, staying within the guidelines, willing to do the math. Oh, we got to have that. We all need to be that at times. But he may look over at the artist and say, there's nothing but madness going on over here at this artist. The scientist's desk is always neat and tidy, everything in its place. The artist's desk, you don't even know what color the desk is. Things are piled up and falling off. Things are important differently to differently gifted people. And while the scientist would look at the artist and say, that's madness over there in his office. The artist would look at the scientist and say, boy, he's all about method and structure. We need to be both. There's a Bible example of how people think differently. Mary and Martha were thinking differently, had so much in common, but different giftings. We really need both. But in the Bible, in the sixth chapter of the Gospel of John, the story is told about Jesus feeding the multitudes, 5,000 men, plus wives and children. The service had gone on for 3 days. Have you ever been to a church service and it lasted for 3 days? No. But I imagine if that happened, your stomach would be growling after 3 days. Jesus wanted to feed everybody so that they wouldn't go away hungry. The Bible said he had compassion on them and wanted to feed them lest they would faint on their way home. And there are two disciples in that story that had different giftings. One was Philip, one was Andrew. So Jesus went up to Philip, who was a scientist. He was a left brain dominant person, at least in that moment. Jesus went up to Philip and said, Philip, I want to feed 5,000 people there. Where can we get enough bread for everybody to eat? And Philip's answer was the answer of a scientist. Oh, I can see sweat breaking out. Oh, my God, this is an impossible task. I don't know how we can connect all these dots and get the job done. And the best offer he had to Jesus, well, Lord, if everybody in this crowd only had one bite of bread to eat, it would cost 3 months' salary just for everybody to have one bite. Now, that was the left brain. We need the left brain. Nothing would be done with excellence without the left brain. No details would be tied down without the left brain. But then there was Andrew in the crowd, another disciple. He came up with a whole different perspective. He was the artist. He was the right brain. He thought outside the box. So Andrew came up and said to the Lord, I can't answer the question, of course, but I did find in this big crowd one boy who has a little bit, fish and bread, something at least maybe you can work with. So both had a different answer to the question. Now, I want to zero in just before we close on Martha's biggest infraction. Here are these two sisters. One is sitting and hearing Jesus speak the word. The other is busy serving and so distracted. Can you imagine the tension in that house? Maybe nobody knew it but Martha, but she was the one all vexed up. And she was working her fingers to the bone. The scientist in her was coming out. The manager in her, she was covering all the details. Now, let me say this about Martha. I would love to pull up to the table and sit down and eat a meal that Martha prepared. Don't you know the seasoning was perfect? Just enough salt and pepper. I mean, she was the kind that could deliver on a project. And it would be done with excellence. But here she is working her fingers to the bone because Jesus is in her home with some other guests and she's wanting to make sure the meal and everything is just right. Thank God for people like that. I'm not down on them at all. Mary, her sister, was in a different place, sitting quietly and listening to Jesus speak the word. Martha's biggest problem was two things. First of all, her attitude was, what I am doing is more important than what he is saying. Now we cross a line. All of you left-brained people out there. Now which am I? I'm both. And which are you? You're both. We have both. We have to employ both. Sometimes we make a decision based on our gut is telling us to go this way. That would be the artist in us. Sometimes we make a decision based on facts and our deductions and our analyzing and our calculating and our figuring it out. We need both. But in this particular story in the Bible, Martha was the one that needed to be brought. Anything wrong with serving? No. If you're a worshiper, you should also be a server. The two go together. But Martha's attitude was, what I'm doing for the Lord is more important than what the Lord is saying right now. That's too far. So Jesus admonished her on it. I don't think he rebuked her for serving, but he brought out the point to her that you're distracted by all of this. And the better part here, in this case, your sister Mary has chosen. It's the main course. And what she's receiving right now will never be taken from her. And then another problem with Martha in this story. Is she expected Mary, her sister, to have the same giftings she had? You can be siblings and have different giftings. I have two daughters. They are both equally valuable to me. I love them both equally. But they are not the same in makeup, in wiring, in giftings. If you've got more than one child, you know they're not the same. Love them just as much, one as the other, but you know, children are different. And this was the case. And so we shouldn't make the mistake of just assuming that a brother or a sister, if they have a different gift than I have, I shouldn't expect them to drop their gift and become like me. Don't expect everybody to have the same giftings you have. What motivates you may not motivate everybody else. And this is by divine design. God planned it that way. Now, if I were God, I'd make everybody like me. Wouldn't it be an awful world? But if we were God, I mean, don't you think that more people ought to be like you? If you were God, wouldn't you arrange it that way? Well, we're not God, thankfully. But He has set each gift, each member in the body, just where He pleased that they be seated in the body. And He's given a diversity of gifts, various kinds of giftings. We all have a tendency to think, my gift is the most important. And Martha crossed the line that day when she, can you imagine telling Jesus, I cannot imagine, Jesus, would you please rebuke my sister and tell her to stop what she's doing and come over here and be more like me and do what I'm doing. I mean, really, that was a bridge too far. So the Lord admonished her on that. In 1 Corinthians 12 and verse 1, it says, now concerning spiritual gifts, brethren, I do not want you to be ignorant. There's no need for God to wink at ignorance concerning spiritual giftings. And then the whole chapter in the next two or three chapters of 1 Corinthians talk in detail about the importance of the different giftings that make up the body. Beginning at verse 4, 1 Corinthians 12, 4, there are diversities of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are differences of ministries, but the same Lord. Now that's when the kingdom takes on the structure that's most efficient and most effective and most powerful. When we realize not everybody can be a singer. Not everybody can be a teacher. Not everybody can serve in this area or that area. But everybody has some gift, and it's unique to you, to that one person. And that person should not expect everybody to have the same gift that they have. Differences of ministries, but the same Lord. And then Paul became an artist for a minute here in 1 Corinthians. In chapter 12, when he gave this animated imagery, I mean, if you were just to think about it, it could be a little funny, but the subject matter is so serious, we won't laugh at it. But Paul literally says, trying to explain how diverse the body is and how differently gifted we are, even if we're sisters, so much in common, but so different in giftings. And so Paul says it like this. If the eye were to get upset because it's not an ear, does that mean the eye is not a part of the body? It can leave the body, or the ear can be dismissed? And then if the hand should say to the foot, I don't need you. It's almost funny. It's like a cartoon or a caricature of it's just an animated narrative that Paul uses. He speaks it that way to get his point across. And it's almost like, him driving the point home. You may be a foot. Don't be jealous of the hand. Don't expect the hand to do what you do. You be the foot and let the hand be the hand. There should be mutual respect between the foot and the hand. And Paul said things in conversation between a foot and the hand. And can you imagine the foot saying to the hand, Well, I'm more important than you are. He couldn't even stand up if it wasn't for me. It's because of me he's able to walk. It's because of me he's able to run. I am the foot. He would never even be able to leave the house if it wasn't for me. I'm the foot. I mean, Paul goes into this kind of a conversation. And then imagine if the hand were to talk back to the foot. I carry everything around for him. I do all the heavy lifting. He couldn't even open the door if it wasn't for me. He couldn't even sign his own name if it wasn't for me. I'm the hand, and I'm more important than the foot. How ridiculous that would be. Different giftings, different members, all in the same body. Now, Mary and Martha had much in common, so much, but they were so different in their giftings. We've heard this story all of our lives. And the big picture, of course, is Mary chose the better thing. She chose to sit and hear the word. It was a moment of visitation. We could serve, and we will have chance to serve, like Martha's serving, but when Jesus is speaking, he's in your home, it's your hour of visitation, then one thing overrides serving in that moment, and that is sitting and hearing what the Lord is saying without causing friction with other people who respond differently while we're busy about serving. I'll close with this verse of Scripture. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 4, the New Living Translation says, pay careful attention to your own work, for then you will get the satisfaction of a job well done, and you don't need to compare yourself to anyone else. Aren't you glad God made you as uniquely as he did? And then he saw the big picture enough to bring us all together and put us exactly where he wanted us, everybody in a perfect fit in the body. And then he didn't even ever leave us alone and expected us to do a lot alone. But he says what holds us in the body is what every joint supplies. What every joint supplies. A joint is not a member. A joint is the place where two members connect. This is a joint. This is a member. This is a member. The joint is where two members connect. So you and another member of the body are more than one other member working together, and whatever you supply the body is what holds you in the body. What good news it is that we're admonished to be careful to pay attention to our own work and be satisfied with a job well done and not compare ourselves to anyone else. That should set somebody free. Would you stand with me?